crackers, to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO.
And hello, listeners. This is Stank Dog, and you are listening to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 27, coming to you on Tuesday, January 6th. I have with me today one of my favorite co-hosts, the one and only Voodoo Hal. Welcome back to the show.
What's up, guys?
Did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, work.
Yeah, same with me. So I worked through most of the holidays. So we are back going in, trying to get back into the flow of things. We had the telephonic craptacular, gave us a little bit of a break, and Mute and I recorded last week, so we're getting back in the flow of things, and today's show is really packed with a lot of stuff. This is one of the biggest, got a lot of show notes in here, I got a lot of different topics, I got a lot of stuff to talk about off the top of my head, so I think we probably jump right into the housekeeping section. One of the first things, here's one thing I do have been wanting to mention for a couple weeks now, and that's the distributed.net team. We have been climbing slowly and steadily and consistently, which is a good thing, and we're pulling, by the time you're hearing this, we may have cracked the top 300. Obviously, as you get towards the top, it's kind of a, what is it, law of diminishing returns. We're only, so we used to jump like sometimes two, three spots at a time, one or two spots. Now we're only going to be jumping like one or two spots a week, if that. So it's starting to slow down as we catch up with some of the top teams. But we are breaking in the top 300, and it's thanks to, we have five people at the top of the team that are every day, almost every day, are putting up consistent numbers of some sort. So I'm going to give... save shouts for the end of the show, but I'll give shouts out here at the beginning to Twirls especially, who's been cranking out numbers consistently. Huge, huge asset, putting up big numbers for the team. In theory, of course. In theory, regularly putting up not only this, but a lot of other stuff. Always producing stuff. Turmoil. Turmoil, who's been around for a long time as well. And Austin XU, consistently putting up numbers. Like the top four or five on the team. And we actually have 25 total members on the team and counting. So we're going to keep climbing, and I just wanted to stop and give a shout-out to those individuals and everybody who's putting up numbers. I know everybody doesn't have a lot of computing power, but every little bit helps. Throw it on whatever little computer you've got. Throw it on your laptop. Throw it on your, you know, your 300 megahertz box, and it'll put up some numbers every few days. So every little bit helps, and anybody who's interested, you can go to the forums, the Digital Doghouse, or go to forums.binrev.com and look for the distributed.net forum, and it'll give you all the information on joining and setting up and running the client efficiently. So, with that out of the way, we'll jump into the email, and I actually got a lot of feedback, a lot of email, a lot of posts and instant messages on lots of things, actually. So, not having feedback, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but this time we got it in spades. So one of the things that I got a lot of feedback on this time from last week's show was my hatred for AOL Instant Messenger, which Voodoo Hal has been on the receiving end of my instant message rants quite a few times.
I thought you were a big fan after the last one.
No. As you, as a lot of the listeners know, and you especially, I switched to Trillian. At home, I have not gotten around to switching my work stuff over yet.
Only to torment your cat, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's an in-joke. We'll have to explain that one later. I had a lot of suggestions about how to handle the situation, and Some of them were from use Linux to use Mac, stuff like that. Obviously, I don't have that luxury all the time. The box that I work on mostly is still an XP box. And people recommended oldversions.com, now, which is to download a previous version before they had support for the ads and the codecs and stuff like that built into it. That's a great idea, but frankly, it's kind of a... I don't even want to support AOL. I never have wanted to support AOL, frankly. But I'm so upset and offended now that I don't even want to touch their old versions anymore. I'd rather find an alternative client. So Trillian, I installed a week or two ago, as I mentioned, and it's been working fine so far. No problems. I don't demand or ask much of it. I mean, I don't want to go into a rant. All I ask is that it work without impeding me with pop-ups and ads and movies. And I don't see why that's such a big demand. I'm not the guy who sends back everything at the restaurant. I'm easily happy. Just make the software work and get out of the way. Don't make it so damn intrusive. So, anyway, Trillian seems to work. I'm happy with it. I'm going to stick with that for now. So thanks to everyone for their suggestions.
I like the use Mac answer, personally.
What's that?
I like the use Mac answer,
yeah.
Personally.
Yeah, I got that from a couple of people, Wintermute, of course, who, if you listen to RFA, I wonder if he's still on his used Mac kick after his Mac died on him. Listening to RFA 94, I think it is, the latest episode of Radio Freak America, where he's on there talking about how his iBook is having some problems, so go check that out. What else? Oh, I got a great email that's, frankly, it's too long and too much information for me to go into on this show from Pixel Fiend, which, by the way, I love that name. It's got such a great ring to it, Pixel Fiend. He has a lot of experience, with live Linux distributions, which I mentioned some here and there as I find out about them. And I think back, early 20s episodes, we went through several of them, like the Fire and Morphix, and we talked about a lot of the forensic and security distributions that were live CDs. And he had quite a bit of experience with them. And like I said, we might go into that on another show and read a lot of the information he shared with me, because it was very, very good. And maybe I can convince him to come on the show and talk about it. I don't know if we can make that happen, but we might try for that. Final piece of email that I wanted to share this week is from 813 error. Gosh, I don't know how he pronounces that. I don't know how I should say that. I want to say 813 error. We're gonna go with that. And he says that he finished listening to all of our shows. Well, that's cool. I've been downloading shows for a while, and I like your show for the information. Almost all of the shows I learned something new from what you were talking or ranting about. Halfway through your apps, I downloaded all the default radio shows, which, of course, are Friends Decoder, Lucky 225, In Theory, and a lot of other guests on that show, and CCCPR, which is Hack and Slash, and those guys just started their show a couple weeks ago. Says he also got RFA shows, and it's next on my list. So thanks for making a nice show. Been nice listening. Thank you very much, 813Error. Thank you very much for the kind words. It's good to hear that. I'm glad that somebody is finding it interesting and informative. You said, you know, learning from what we're talking or ranting about. Now, we really do. I know it doesn't seem like it sometimes. I really do try to keep the ranting and the politics and stuff like that to a minimum. I try not to go too much into that and keep it to the tech side. But sometimes there's some overlap and, you know, you can't really help it. But even if I'm doing that, it's to make a point. Even when I rant, for example, about the AOL Messenger, there's a point in that they're pushing software and codecs and stuff down in their client software, and whether it's pushed or whether it's snuck in there on the install as some sort of, you know, hidden software. What's the term?
Spyware?
Spyware. That's the term I'm looking for. Some kind of spyware, little thing they've snuck in there. You know, that can cause damage and problems to other things in your system. There's a danger there that people need to open their eyes to. So even when we have a rant, we usually have a point or something behind it. But mainly, We're trying to teach people. We're trying to touch on topics and teach people new things, or at least let them hear about them, and they might be interested enough to go find out more information themselves. We'll share the experiences that we have. I know you and I discuss some of the programming that we do for a living and professionally, and what it's like, you know, working as a programmer or as a sysadmin or as whatever, and kind of share those experiences, teach what we are familiar with. And frankly, what we aren't familiar with, I do a lot of research for the show. When I come up with an interesting topic or an interesting news story, I go research it, and I learn about it because, you know, I don't know everything. Heck, I don't know very much, to be quite frank. So I do a lot of research, and I learn myself doing the show. So it's beneficial to me as well. So thank you again for that. I'm glad that you get something out of it. I try to get something out of it myself, and I try to put something back into it. So thank you very much. I do appreciate hearing back from you. It does mean a lot to hear somebody say that. So I think you agree with that, or?
Oh, definitely.
I mean, I do, you know, when I'm reading for these stories, I learn more doing the show notes than I might learn it a week, you know, at work or even in school, you know. So hackers teach themselves a lot. I think we all know that. Now, I've been busy this week too, so when we come down to talking about what we've been working on, why don't you go first? And I've been jabbering on, so why don't you, what have you been working on? Well, I know what you've been working on. Why don't you share some of the interesting stuff that you've been working on lately?
Okay, we'll start out with the simple stuff. Finally moved my web server over to a different machine. Mm-hmm. I guess that's some good news. The big news is I'm volunteering, I guess is the word, to set up a giant DVD ripping cluster, actually. Mm. It's going to be pretty cool. We have four 8-bit machines. Yeah.
What is that?
We have four 8-processor machines.
An 8-bit, that's like a Nintendo Entertainment System?
Yes, we have a cluster of Nintendos.
Dude, that would be elite. A cluster of NES. Working on distributed.net, that would be so fat.
One packet per year, all right. but yeah, we have a total of 32 processors. These are pretty heavy-duty machines, 8 processors each, 4 gigs of memory, 2 or 4 gigs of memory, I forgot already. And we also have 6 ripping nodes that primarily just take the VOBs off of the DVDs themselves and dump them onto another server that we have with 2 terabytes of storage over a gigabit Ethernet. So we're pretty good. It's going to be pretty fun.
That is a lot of power. That is a lot of power.
Yes.
That is the.
And it's going to be interesting. Also, we didn't talk about this before, but got a new Explorer, which is interesting driving. Ooh. Considering I've been driving a Protégé. I've had 2 Protégés and a Honda Civic. So little cars to this big-ass thing.
It's quite a transition.
Yeah, I'm going to kill somebody, cutting people off and forgetting I have a giant ass.
So is this an 03 or an 04? Or?
Actually, this is an older one.
Oh, you, okay.
My Protégé. But it made more sense to do it this way, so I can fit more tech crap in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, the useful factor, you know? It's very useful having that.
Well, you get really odd looks driving a Protégé that looks like a lowrider for some reason. They look in the back seat, and there's a compact Reliant rack mount server that weighs 200 pounds sitting back there. Drove around with one of those for 2 months in my Protégé.
Mm.
I thought it was time to get something that could actually haul something.
Yeah, right. Well, the key is you're not supposed to have it in there too long. You're supposed to move it from A to B and then take it out.
Well,
wait a minute, don't tell me you've got that big rack in the back and that was that mobile computer you talked about a couple...
Exactly, no.
The mobile,
that would be great.
The mobile mainframe running off an LCD in the front.
That's actually why I got the Explorer, so I could put this DVD ripping cluster in the Explorer itself.
Hmm.
I mean, you stop by Blockbuster, pop the DVD in, 30 seconds later, take it back.
How wrong would that be? You're sitting
out. That.
You're sitting back in the park. You're sitting out in the parking lot. You walk out, rip a couple DVDs. You walk back in 5-10 minutes later and swap them out for more.
Yeah, well, each of those servers require. I think they have two to four power supplies each on them, or redundant power supplies that each pull 14 amps. So yeah, good luck getting that in your car.
Just walk in with a great big thick extension cable and ask them if you can plug in.
Can I plug this in?
Oh man. Well, since you brought the car up, I'll talk about my whole weekend this weekend was Mr. VTech and I did some more work on the Snackmobile. I guess I probably should mention. Duel says I have a bad habit of teasing and not giving the information. What we put in the car this time was a DVD player, which you and I talked about before I was going to do. That's done now. I put in a DVD player with a LCD touch panel screen up front. So we mounted both of those in Saturday. And the number of wires in this monster is just phenomenal. So it was an all-day job. And then today, for the most part, we finished putting in the DVD navigation system part itself. So a couple hours ago, I just wrapped up and finished, got it working. I got a few more tweaks to do. I have to do some research on where to plug some of this stuff up. But I got that all working, so that was the majority of my weekend. And we did film it, so there will be a segment on Hack TV showing some of the detail of it and some demos of it, which is really cool.
Where'd you put the coffee maker?
I had to put that under the seat.
Okay.
Oh, no. That would be, you know, everybody's seen that case with the coffee maker built into the PC case?
Right.
See, I need to slide that into the dashboard somehow. See, I'm not much, honestly, that's one cliche I don't fit into. I've never been a big coffee drinker. Never been a big coffee person. I'm not a morning person, so.
That might explain it.
Yeah. I'm lucky if I can get up at the crack of noon.
The crack of noon, eh?
Yeah. Also, Friday, that was Saturday and Sunday. Friday, I did have my 2600 meeting, which went pretty well. It was not a huge meeting, but it was, I guess, 6, 7, 8 people maybe. We discussed possibly changing the name, kicked around some ideas about that. And we also got into some more detail about putting together maybe some sort of Root Wars. Not just for the group, but maybe as an event, you know, like they have gaming events and LAN parties and stuff like that. We thought about putting together some Root Wars. So someone else in our group came up with that idea, and he's been doing a lot of work putting it together. So we discussed some of the logistics behind that and how we could do it and brainstorm some stuff and see if we can find out where to do it. That's really the big stumbling block. Everywhere that we can contact and find out, you tell them that you're putting together a LAN party, then, oh, yeah, that's no problem. You tell them you're putting together Root Wars, that's a little different.
Hey, technically, it's still a LAN party. Everybody's gaming.
Well, that is true.
I mean, it's not lying. It's just...
You know what? That's a good point. That is a very good point. They don't have to know that what we're playing is King of the Hill, you know, capture the flag, whatever.
Just don't let them know that they're playing too.
Yeah, right. I know, and that's the other funny thing is, because of the perception, and again, we're not going to go into that, but because the perception of Root Wars, Hacker, you know, what it is, the way we're designing and setting it up is, frankly, we just need like a hangar or a warehouse. We will set up all the computers and network independently. All we need is power to plug in. You know, we don't even need to plug into someone else's network or internet access or anything like that. We just need the space. So I got a couple outlets I can check and see if I can pull some strings on to see if we can work that out. But go ahead.
Since you brought that up, actually, I was going to go ahead and I think we talked about this a little bit before, also setting up some challenges and things. But I and another, I think you guys have seen him a couple times on the boards, Axid. AXID,
right.
Formerly, I guess, one of the co-hosts of Hacker Host, or
right.
Co-admins, whatever the hell you want to call it. We've been setting up our wargaming networks, because he has one and I have one as well. We're finally setting up a VPN between them so we can hold a whole lot more users. So if anybody's interested in that, they can check out white-light.tk or my own site, www.mojonetworks.net. We have a large number of different types of machines. I think I have 4 different types of RISC machines, so people can play on other things other than Intel.
Right, right.
I've got things from SGI MIPS to Spark. Obviously, I'm a big Spark person. I've even got HP Unix, the PA RISC boxes, and also Max to get the PPCs.
Wow.
He's got a large number of Intel boxes, so, I mean, there's a large number of different types of things to play on. We haven't really discussed what type of format we're going to have yet. Currently, it's kind of going to be just get an account on one box, and there's no real time limit, but I think we're going to start setting up team things and things like that.
Yeah, that would be. I think that would be a great thing to do. I think that would be a good interactive thing that everybody could participate in and form their own teams if they wanted to. What I would like to see from a war game is a combination between an out-and-out open, no-holds-barred, or few-holds-barred. You know, one of the rules of most war games is no DOS.
Right.
You know, that's one of the standard rules is no DOSing because that's just, it's pointless. I would like to see, but other than that, usually it's just find your way into the box.
Right.
You know? I would like to see a combination of something between that and between, like, the, what is it, hack this site?
Right.
And stuff like that, where they have rules and they've set up holes, or they've set up things for you to look at and hack away and find at, and they give you, somewhat give you clues towards it. I like to see something in the middle, where there might be some clues given, or some hints, or some pointers, but they're very vague, and it's just enough information to get you started or get you going. I like to see something in the middle there, so that it's not given to you like on some of the others, but then again, you don't bang your head against a wall at the same time.
Right, that's actually the format that I'm wanting. My idea was to create, because we've done this before, and what I would do is write a custom, like for instance, write a custom daemon that runs on its own port that has a buffer overflow in it that forces, you know, there's not going to be a pre-compiled exploit for it. You're going to have to do it yourself. Or something simple like, I am not big on web development. I'm just not a web developer. I'm a programmer for the most part.
Mm.
So a lot of things in web security I really don't understand. Well, I guess I understand. I don't know a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I wanted to do is also have things like on web servers, having key files hidden, possibly hidden on the HTTP server itself, maybe hidden on the server. And then each of the key files has a like an MD5 hash, of course, and a username or whatever. And they actually log them onto a main database to keep, like, a score. And
right.
So these key files could be found anywhere on any service, not necessarily just breaking into the boxes. And that's
right.
Kind of what I wanted to do with it.
Right.
Kind of like capture the flag, but the flags are all over the place.
Right, exactly. There's multiple flags. That's the cool thing. And then there are some unflagged exploits or things that could be done, you know?
Right.
Bonus that will even surprise us, I hope. You know, and the... like some sort of hint system. There are going to be... the thing is, I want it to be accessible to new users and people new to the hacking community. I don't want it to be blown away either.
Right.
So, like some sort of hint system. Maybe once you get in and establish an account, like you mentioned, or keys to upload for points or whatever, maybe once you get an account, there can be a way that you could pull hints somehow. And the more, you know, each one may be giving you more information than the last to kind of help keep the game moving. Because another thing that I hear a lot is people get frustrated. They'll get through one, two levels, and then they get hit a wall and they just quit.
Right.
So maybe some kind of hint system or some kind of help. Obviously, I assume this is something they'd be open to talk about in the forums, stuff like that, work together as groups or as teams.
Right. Well, actually, what I was going to do, actually, is... how many actuallys can I fit in one sentence? is if anybody wants to volunteer to help out with this, they can send me an email at voodoohow@benrev.com or voodoohow@mojonetworks.net. Either way, I get it. And we could use any volunteers, anybody who would want to help set this up. The sooner we get it set up, the better, obviously. I think it'll be a fun experience.
Right, and if there's, you know, of course, anything I can offer, you know, I'm more than willing to do it. I got the bandwidth and stuff for a lot of those type things, so...
Yeah, we'll have a JCL puzzle.
Yeah. Oh,
I'll
man.
That one.
I don't want any part of that one. I'm trying to get so far away from that. Ugh.
Well, also, one thing I wanted to do is kind of a combination between what's already been done, like, what is it, Hacker Labs, or Hacker's Lab.
Yeah.
Rather than having, you know, just these flags, not necessarily everywhere, but I wanted to set up, like, I guess, beginner challenges. You know, here are a couple things to do. This will earn you a few points. Okay, we'll see this OpenBSD 3.2 box running on Spark 5. Yeah, that'll earn you 1,000 points kind of thing.
Right.
Like, you have different scales.
Right, maybe, and maybe by earning those points, you spend those points for hints or something on the harder stuff. I don't know.
That's a cool idea.
We're just brainstorming. Yeah, this is just brainstorming. But yeah, I started doing something like this on the old site before I moved over to BenRev.com and redid everything. And even on BenRev, I've said it many times, there's lots of little surprises and things that I've hidden out there. If somebody hacks around at the site, they're going to find some hidden pages and some funny jokes and stuff like that. So, I already started making some little things like that I think could fit into that scenario. So, yeah, that's something I've been wanting to do and unfortunately don't have the time. So, yeah, if anybody wants to, can help out or has time to help out, contact Voodoo Hal, like you said, and I would love to see that get going. I would love to see a War Games organized and up, kept up, you know, and updated. And the other thing is ever-changing, updated, new additions and new exploits and stuff like that.
Well, also the great part is that, you know, if somebody wants to donate some machines to the games, obviously it makes it a bit difficult being across the country, possibly world, depending. Right. But that's why we're setting up the VPN. So that way, if somebody wants to add their own network to it and add some nodes to it, then they can just connect to the VPN. And so to the users, it's one big network.
Right, and they can coordinate that through you then?
Yep.
Very cool, very cool. Now I can't wait. Now I can't wait. I hope we get some people that can help out with that. Now also at my meeting, we had a visitor from out of town, who was, I guess, in the area for the holidays, like a lot of people, and he found our site on the web, such as it is, and saw where we met and came out and visited, and he frankly came out and said, "You'll never see me again. You know, I'm here for 1 month. I'm in the area. I thought I'd stop by and check it out." So it was cool that he actually came out to check it out. So, I mean, I know that's a big step because I know a lot of people, even myself, I sat at home and I'm like, I really don't know if I want to go get into this. I really don't know these people. I don't know how to react or how people are going to treat me or how I'm going to treat other people. And so just the fact that he came out was really cool. Hopefully when he gets back to school, he's just down on vacation, like I said. When he gets back, he might find some a group up there where he's at that he can continue to go to regularly. But it was, and that's, you know, it's really cool. I'm very proud of the people in my group. They've always been this way. They're very accommodating of new people. This guy came right out and said, "You'll never see me again. I'm only here for, you know, one meeting." And you know, it would have been very easy to dismiss him or ignore him or, you know, it's like, oh, he's only here. No, they were very accommodating and very nice to him and like they are to everyone else. And that's my experience with the meeting has always been like that. We don't leave people out, even no matter what level they are. Sometimes people are more advanced. We might branch off in talking about a subject, but we always try to come back and involve everyone in it. And I'm really proud of them that they're good about that kind of stuff. And I like to think and hope that most meetings, most of the ones I've heard about, are like that. If anybody shows up, of course. I know some people have that problem. My other big news was earlier this week, I purchased an omnidirectional 802.11 antenna. Wi-Fi antenna. I got it from a place called Fleeman Anderson and Bird Corp., which is FAB-CORP. .com. If you want to go check them out, it's an omnidirectional. I had been looking for cantennas. Frankly, I was too lazy to put one together. Yes, I could have. The directions are all over the place. I just didn't have the time. I didn't feel like putting it together. So I went out looking for a cantenna, pre-made, a nice looking one, to do a little war driving with to put inside the Stangmobile. And I saw the omnidirectional ones, and I was chatting with Mute, and he actually, Wintermute, convinced me to give the omnidirectional a try. It's not going to reach as far as a cantenna. I knew that. And, of course, I have used it since then, and it doesn't. It's not going to reach as far as a cantenna because it's not, you don't have the ability to aim it. But it does give you a much wider area of effect. You can pick up signal stronger from a farther distance away. You still can't do it from aiming the can and driving further away from it, you know, which is ideal if you're really doing something that you shouldn't be, of course. It would be nice to be far away from the target, but for driving around, just doing general war driving and sniffing out access points just for the fun of it, the omnidirectional works really well. So if anybody's interested in that, it was not that expensive. It was less than $20. I think it was somewhere around $20 to $25 shipped for the one I got. And they have higher quality ones if you want upwards of $50+, including some that were just enormous things you could mount to your house, which I didn't know they even made them that big. So they had a wide variety. Go check out that site if you're interested in it. But for about $25, you can get it shipped a general, small quality, normal, average quality omnidirectional antenna for about $20-$25. And it will enhance your war driving abilities. It really will. And the other thing is, now that I bought the omnidirectional, I have something to help out with my war driving to get me a little more range. Now, I don't know what logic there is to this, but for some reason now, I feel more likely or more dedicated to going and building my own cantenna. Because I have an antenna that works that helps me right away, so I got my need fulfilled. So now I have a luxury of time to work on making my own cantenna. I guess that's the logic. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. And Voodoo Hal, like we were talking about before, we've been working through the holidays. All that I've been doing is Oracle, 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 Oracle for the past couple of months. I'm using PLSQL, writing PLSQL programs, which is SQL for Oracle, Oracle's version of SQL. And my hands are tied that I have to use PLSQL. I was ordered to use PLSQL, so I have to make this language do what we need to accomplish, even though it's not the best tool for the job, the best language for the job. So I'm having to work with a limited language, but I have very tight constraints to stick to, so it's like forcing that square peg into a round hole. So it's very, very frustrating. So I've been pounding my head at that, and I'm all oracled out right now. I'm all oracled out. By the time this streams, I may just be complete mental case. That's been my week. Now, let's move to some actual topics because, man, I think people are getting tired of hearing me complain about Oracle, frankly.
Oracle and AIM.
Yeah, and AIM, exactly. I hereby declare that there will not be any discussion on AIM for the next month, at least. I hereby decree it. Watch, tomorrow some big controversy will come out about AIM, and I won't be able to talk about it. actually, I read an interesting article in Popular Science about universities, which is something near and dear to my heart, about how universities get interesting new technology and do a lot of new research and new things before they hit, before they're available for public consumption or retail consumption. And I thought a couple of these were interesting, and I don't know if you've had any experience with these, but I thought maybe you might have seen these as well. The first one they mentioned was a smart board rear projection interactive whiteboard.
Wow.
Yeah, so basically it's a widescreen TV that can project notes, uses digital cameras to track pointers and hand gestures. So the professor can point at it or point with a laser pointer or something like that and stand back. You don't have to stand up there and draw on it with the, you know, with those dry erase markers and stuff like that. So we've had something similar in classrooms I've been in. I don't know if they're exactly the same. It was more like a projector. It wasn't a widescreen television. It was more of a projector that would project up notes and then you could write over top of them on a whiteboard, but which was also projected. So you weren't writing up on the board, you're writing in front of the PC. It's not exactly the same. What's cool about this, I think, is that because you're doing the notes this way, you can actually save the files. They are data, and they're on a computer somewhere. So I don't know if the instructors would be nice enough to do this, but they're taking the notes for you. They've written the notes already. Just email them to you or save them or get them from the professor somehow so you don't get writer's cramp sitting there taking notes all day. For those listeners who are in college courses, you know that you'll sit there in a class for an hour, hour and a half, sometimes more, and write non-stop, copying down notes. So this would be a godsend for something like that. Have you ever seen anything like this in practice?
No, I'm still used to the chalk and the...
Yeah, very old school.
The abacus and...
And the most universities that I've been to, and I've been to several universities. I've been to 4 or 5 different colleges and or universities. They have a combination. I mean, it's like the way funding works and budgeting and, you know, the science department gets X number of dollars, and the education gets this much, and social sciences. The way they split it up, you'll find that some departments and some rooms, even within the department, you'll have one room down the hall that's the old school chalkboards and the big fat erasers and stuff. They don't even have funds to buy colored chalk or anything like that to color coordinate. I had a professor, it was an economics professor, who would bring in his own colored chalk from home because he loved to be able to show the different lines color coordinated so that you could clear. And it was very cool. It helped. But at the same time, the classroom one or two doors down was a state-of-the-art overhead projector with computer screens and monitors spread to the back of the class. So there's a lot of variation from one room to the next in colleges because they don't upgrade them all. They don't have the funds or the money to upgrade the entire university at the same time. I'm sure students out there on campuses know that there's always one computer lab on campus that everybody wants to go to because it has the P4s. Nobody wants to go to that crummy ghetto-ass lab on the other side of campus that has the 333s in it, you know?
So, I don't know. I like going to the ones with the old 486s.
Ooh.
My school, yeah. Those are the new ones, by the way.
The newest ones are 486s?
Yep.
The school I most recently attended, their official low-end supported standard, I think, was up to P2-450s or P3-450s. I'm not sure. I think that was the lowest thing they had on campus. So that's not too awful bad. You can still work with them. I work with them in here in my office, here in the Hat Cave at home. I still have plenty of those. So, it's all about funding. It's all about having the money to get it done.
Joke.
So, here's another cool one. And most of these things are in use at large private universities. Public schools, they definitely have funding problems. So most of these you find at like the Harvards and Yales, and Dartmouth was one I saw the name on a lot. Dartmouth had a lot of this stuff going on. The second one was EduQ Personal Response System. Now that is a transmitter that allows students to beam answers back to the instructor. Sounds like a game show to me. It uses infrared signals to send answers back to the instructor. I don't know if they didn't go into detail about how they were used. Maybe it was during the class lectures, polls, or something like that. I don't know if they're actually used for exams. But, I don't know, that could be interesting. But infrared signals? I'm not sure. What about the hackability on those? Can you put one of those programmable recorders and somehow, I don't know what you could really do there, but...
Oh, you could probably, if you could get... Well, the problem with IR, isn't it line of sight?
Yeah, I guess it is, of course.
Well, I mean, you could possibly, you know, get a small PDA and write some type of recording software. So, for the class before you that takes the test, record all the answers.
And you can innocently leave it up front and catch all the answers, then just walk in nonchalant, oh, I left my PDA here, let me pick it up.
And you could actually do software like they did on the TV shows when they, you know, have everyone vote for your favorite whatever. You know, you can have a chart of all the most popular answers for a question. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that I think is good. It seems, I don't know, it seems like it's more helpful to the instructors than it is to the students, though.
Yeah.
You know, the instructors can ask questions and get poll results and stuff quicker, but the students, I don't know what it really saves them other than the energy of raising their hand. You know? How many people have their homework done? You just push a button instead of raising your hand, or...
That's like a silent auction to me.
Yeah, right. Have to turn it into a reverse auction. I kind of get a weird Big Brother feeling from it, but I guess it's not so... Not really. I mean, I wonder if they're... I'm sure they're not tied to the student. I wonder if they're built into the desk or into the classroom or they stay with the classroom. They're probably not tied to the student in any way, shape, or form. If you go to a different desk or a different station next time, would you use a different device so therefore it's not... You know, it's used for... What's the disclaimer they always put on some of that software is the statistics will be kept as a whole and not traced to an individual, that kind of thing.
Right.
I hope they're used that way. I don't know.
Well, what I'm wondering is how powerful would the IR transmitter have to be? Because, I mean, what if you're talking about one of these auditorium with 500 students per class or some crazy number?
Well, I guess they can have...
The last guy in the back row. Why haven't you turned any of your work in the entire semester?
Yeah. They could have, I guess, multiple receivers set around somehow.
In, like, the back of the seats or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that could be. But if that's the case, why go with IR infrared? Why not just put buttons wired down underneath the seat so you just press the button in front of you?
Yeah, I'm wondering why they wouldn't do, like, an RF thing myself, but...
Yeah, well... Again, this is you know, new stuff they're trying. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work or it's the best idea. It's just new stuff that's being tried and tested. It may not be successful. It may not spread. I also have this picture of 500 people in an auditorium now all playing Big Bucks. You know, no whammy, stop! You know, spin again. You know, Joker. I don't know. I picture people playing game shows or something. Or just buzzing the teacher randomly just to annoy them or something. Now, the last two that I have here, I think, are the coolest. Number three is Cisco IP Softphone Software. Now, I guess they throw the word Cisco in there because it's, you know, commercial, whatever. They have to put that Cisco name in because they probably donated it or gave them a great price. But this is, well, I think we pretty much know what this is, or we can guess. It allows students to make free long-distance calls over the Internet, voice over IP, of course. This is great. This is very cool. This is something that they should give students. They have tons of bandwidth on college campuses. They totally have. They have huge backbones, plenty of bandwidth. They should have done this years ago, if you ask me. This is a very, very cool thing. I mean, it's, you know, with Vonage and Packet 8, which we've discussed ad infinitum. You'd think colleges would have done this first, and then it would have trickled down to the home. But in actuality, it kind of happened the opposite way. Kid, when you're in college, a lot of people leave home, leave the state, leave the country even. And to have free long distance from your college, you can call home more often, you can call friends. You can call friends in other colleges even, and maybe work together with people that are in similar fields of study and stuff like that. That it's a huge, I mean, that's a huge benefit for students. It really is. Besides the obvious silly, you know, you can call home and call your friends back home and joke and talk and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of great stuff you can do with that one.
Yeah, but you know they're going to tack on $200 or $300 a semester for a tuition for a new phone service fee.
I guess if you're going to Dartmouth and Harvard and Yale and those Ivy Leagues, you've got money to burn anyway.
That's true.
Or you're on a free ride, one of the two. So, yeah, they'll make it up somewhere. That's what universities do. They'll get it from you somewhere. They'll call it, you know, your university starts up a football program, for example, and all of a sudden now you've got an athletics fee built into your tuition, you know? Even if you don't go to any of the games or have any interest in the team whatsoever, you're still paying that $20 a month each student pays no matter what as part of their tuition. But that's another show. Now, the fourth one, this is my favorite. I actually suggest this idea at my old job. We would be scattered around the building a lot, back in the computer room, back in the tape room, and trying to get in touch with each other, chasing each other down. And I suggested this a long time ago, half joking, half serious. Well, this is actually being used now. It's called Vocera Communications Wi-Fi Badges. And these are clip-on badges that connect to the Wi-Fi network with voice over IP support, which is I didn't think about that back in the day, but that's definitely a cool thing, to allow hands-free calling. Now, the first two words that must jump into everybody's mind, what's the first, when I describe that, what's the first thing you think of?
Pizza?
What's that?
No clue.
Star Trek.
Oh.
The little communicator badges.
Headquarters.
Yeah, I would be the most annoying person with one of these things. I'd be walking around going, meet me at the bridge of Starship Anderson Hall. You know?
Make it so.
Yeah, make it so. Mute, we are running low. Engage warp engines to coordinates midterm. Engage, make it so, number two.
Captain's log.
Yeah. Obviously, this only works over in Wi-Fi range. So if you've got a lot of good Wi-Fi coverage, if you're on a university that has full coverage of the campus with Wi-Fi, then it's great. And, again, combining it with the voice over IP, especially that free voice over IP we mentioned earlier. you could be sitting in a study hall or, well, you shouldn't be talking in a study hall or a library, but you could be sitting outside of the library, in the parking lot, anywhere on campus, and talking long distance with your grandmother back in whatever through a voice badge, you know? That is cool. That is straight out of Star Trek. I want that. I want that at my university. I want to go to a university that has that kind of stuff.
No joke.
You know, that would rock. I can't afford those kind of universities, unfortunately. But somebody can. If anybody has, and by the way, anybody who's listening who has experience with these or has seen these, excuse me, or uses these in their classroom, email us, radio@benrev.com, and let us know, because I'd love to hear, are these things useful? Is this something you like or don't like? So, you know, let me know if you have any experience with this kind of stuff, because some of them, I think, actually all of those I think are good, some better than others, but they're all good ideas, I think. I'm sure there's some bad things that have been tried, too, so. Speaking of voice over IP, I'm going to shift into another topic here. This is, you know, between voice over IP becoming popular and taking over and a huge revolution in voice over IP coming, I can feel it, and the obvious cell phone boom that's happened over the last 5-10 years, you know, just growing exponentially. I got a memo earlier this week, and first of all, dual parallel. If you're listening, you might want to turn the speakers down. You might want to walk away for a few minutes. You might want to cover your ears, because I got bad news. I have to give my condolences to dual parallel if you're hearing this. But I got the following memo. It's dated December 18th. I just got it last week. Says, as of December 31st, Bell South, which is the Southeast United States, Bell South will no longer provide payphone service to its customers.
Wow.
That's it. No more payphone service from Bell South. It says, at this time, it appears that our new payphone provider, say that 10 times fast, that our new payphone provider will be First American Telephone. Their rate of $65 a month was the lowest available. So there will still be some, but they're all co-cots now. They're all going to be owned by different companies, and Bell South's completely getting out of the payphone business. And co-cots are only going to operate payphones that make money. So payphones continue to die. They're just a dying breed. Bell South sucks anyway. Just to throw that in there, I have to get that. They still suck. They've always sucked. They always will suck. But they're not making any money off of a lot of these payphones, and they're getting sick of it. They're getting out of the business completely. All switching to co-cots, like I said. And like I mentioned, I was reading from the memo earlier. $65 a month is what it costs a client to get a payphone now from this particular co-cot. Now, that may be because we're a large organization, and that's probably a better rate. I don't know how much it would cost. I'm sure you couldn't get one in your home for that price, or, you know, something like that. But $65 a month is what it costs us to have a payphone and make it available. So we would have to pay that much for it, and the phone company has to get some money and make some money off of it, which is why they're passing that $65 off onto us to get it. For what the way they justify it is for placing and maintaining the hardware, you know, the maintenance and the networking and the switching and all that kind of stuff back. Now, see, that's already there. To me, that's a sunk, what we refer to in business as a sunk cost. It's already paid for, it's already done, it's already in place. So I don't particularly agree with the logic behind that, but that's the way they think. So at my particular organization, we had 30-plus payphones on campus before this announcement, and from what I understand, I don't know an exact number, but I heard that only 3 of them are going to stick around. So we dropped from over 30 payphones to 3. So I hate to say it, but I'm afraid that the payphone is, I have to say that it's officially endangered in my book. I think the payphone is an endangered species. Dying out.
But is that, I mean, really, is that necessarily a bad thing? I mean, is it a bad sign?
Well, see, you know, I lean more towards the hacking side of things. I'm not a big freak, but I know Duel is just going to be devastated. He's going to be so mad. He's talked about on the show before how payphones are disappearing. And, I mean, I like payphones. They're fun. They're handy sometimes. They're, you know, they have a lot of useful things to do with them. But I guess I'm not as heartbroken as most people. I know there's some other people out there that love it. Decoder even told me before that if it wasn't for payphones, he wouldn't have gotten into freaking. You know, that's how he got into freaking. That's how a lot of freaks get into freaking. That's what their introduction is. So I guess it's scary in that aspect, and some people have a closer relationship or love for them than maybe you or I do, or appreciation for them. So I guess, I think it's a bad thing.
Okay.
I think it's a bad thing. At the same time, I personally, from a very personal level, don't send me hate mail for saying this, but if they replaced the payphone with, like, some kind of kiosk, I would be happier with the kiosk myself. I would love to sit there and hack away at the kiosk instead of the payphone, but that's just me. Other people are going to feel the opposite. So, you know, I guess it takes all types. So, yeah, I know some people are going to be bummed about that, and I don't know how much longer, I don't know how many more years the payphone has. I really don't. There's always going to be payphones in airports and stuff like that. They're not going anywhere. They're not going away. High, big traffic areas, they're always going to be there because they make money. You know, all the businessmen coming in on their planes. Even them, they still, so many of them have gone to cell phones and stuff too, but they do still make money. Now, we've got some time left to hammer through this. This is a new, temporary yet recurring segment. This is from Wired Magazine. Now, they have a segment. This is from the January issue. Yes, January 2004 issue. Welcome to 2004, by the way.
All right, thanks.
Happy New Year to all of our listeners. This is 101 Ways to Save the Internet. It's by Paul Boutin, B-O-U-T-I-N. It's called 101 Ways to Save the Internet. Now, I wanted to go through some of these. I'm not going to go through all 101, but I thought maybe we could do a few today, do a few next week and week after, a few at the end of each show, because there are some interesting things on here and stuff that we have said on the show many times, and we've been saying not only recently, but over the past year, 2 years, even further back. So there's some stuff in here that I found interesting, and I thought we'd just shoot through them. We don't have to spend a lot of time on any of them unless we, you know, if we feel like discussing it. But I thought I'd read a couple of these, and please interrupt me if you want to add something to them or if you want to say, I agree, I disagree, or something like that. Is that cool?
I concur.
Okay, let's pound through these quickly because, like I said, it's 101. Maybe we can do 25 per episode. So let me shoot through these. Let's see. Number one, basically these are, they'll give me a one-sentence definition and then like a little two-sentence blurb describing it. I'm just going to read the topic. Number one is to unleash vigilante justice on spammers. Now, I know that sounds great, and I would love to do that, but I don't know. Is that the right thing? Is that something to save the Internet? Is that something we should do?
Well, I think if you could, you know, actually pinpoint who the spammers were, that'd be one thing.
Right.
The problem with vigilante justice is it gets out of hand real quick.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the poor schmuck who's got his poor little SMTP relay who didn't know about it all of a sudden gets flogged.
Right, right.
In that thing, but I think if implemented correctly, hell yeah, I think it would stop people real fast.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I said I wasn't going to read the blurb, but it does say in the blurb, one activist proposed filters that launch distributed denial-of-service attacks back at spammers. Great. Just make sure we have the right addresses first, which is exactly what you said. Very good point. Number two, this is one of my favorites on the whole list. Slash song prices. Charge 29 cents per download. You'll make it up in volume.
Definitely.
That's beautiful.
There's nothing else to say about that.
That's poetic. That's beautiful. I would pay 29 cents for a song, and I would buy every song I've ever wanted. That's a reasonable, fair price, and I would have a completely legal hard drive full of all of my favorite music, and I would pay for it. I think that's absolutely valid and fair. Number three, four words. It says, quit already, Jack Valenti. Yeah, there's nothing to add to that. I agree.
Get out.
This one, I'm going to read all of these, even though I don't want to go political, but this one says, appoint Larry Lessig to the Supreme Court. Is he a Democrat or a Republican? Who cares? Laws governing information flow are the new affirmative action, abortion, and gun control rolled into one. I don't know what to say about that. I like the, is he Democrat or Republican? Who cares? Well, yeah, who cares? Get the job done. That's what I care about. So, number five, I like this. Create the, quote, all-in-one inbox. Email, phone calls, instant messages, all in one single app.
That would be nice.
I think that would be very cool. I think it'd be very, very cool. And I know people aren't going to like me saying this, but the latest version of Outlook moved in that direction. It embedded, MSN Messenger or Windows Messenger or whatever the hell the difference of the two are.
Yeah, they've had that actually since, I think, when Exchange 2000 came out, because they actually incorporated, possibly before Exchange 2000, parts of MSN Messenger into a corporate-wide messaging system.
So. Yeah, I think that could be perfectly handy. This one, I don't know how reasonable it is or how realistic it is, but it's triple our cable modem speed. Well, yeah, I guess we all want... Hell, why stop at tripling it?
Damn, you people are greedy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, actually, Comcast just doubled ours up to 3 megabits. And
yeah, so I have heard, and I might have an announcement about that next week. We will see about that.
But for the most part, it might be twice as fast, but, I mean, my porn comes at the same speed.
Yeah, right?
It doesn't display any faster.
Yeah, right? And actually, they have a funny little blurb here that says... This is their suggestion to help it out. Turn off the Golf Channel and UPN and use that bandwidth for the extra modem speed. I'm sure there's some golf enthusiasts that'll disagree with that. Number seven, demand truth in advertising for software updates.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I think, come on, absolutely.
Well, I agree. I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
Well, true, true. Number eight, ooh, this could be... Wow. Number eight, declare spammers are terrorists. Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm not sure.
No, I can't agree with that one.
Yeah, I don't know. They're well...
Well, I think they're coming along the same lines as declaring hackers or penetration people as terrorists.
That's dangerously close to home.
Yeah, what they're doing is, I would consider it morally wrong.
Right.
But I don't think it's an act of terrorism. They're not hurting anyone.
Well, and you know what? In their defense, they don't, a lot of them don't see it. A lot of them know they're morally wrong and they just do it anyway. But some of them don't think they're morally wrong. I mean, there is something to be said, and we're not going to get into a debate, but there is something to be said about free speech. They do have some rights to free speech, and is stopping spam, you know, there's a gray area there, which that could be a very long full show debate. So I think we'll move on. Declaring spammers as terrorists, yeah, we're going to put that in the iffy, that's not too good idea category.
I have an important spam question.
What's that?
I've been wondering this for a while. What's the point? I mean, how many people actually click on the links that you receive in an email now? How many people even look at the emails?
Well, you know, honestly, they must be. I mean, people are clicking through them. It absolutely is a fact. At what ratio? I don't know. We could do some research and find out. But yes, that is the reason that it perpetuates, is because it does work. There are people out there that click on them. If there weren't, they would stop doing it. And secondly, it's not always about the click-throughs. Even though they make it sound like that and they want the people to click through to the site and whatever, anybody who's ever... I worked for the advertising industry. I worked for a company. I did computer work for a company that it was in the advertising industry. And I saw the Nielsen ratings regularly. I missed that job, actually. I had to see all the shows before they were announced, and I got to see all the money that went through people registering commercials for shows and the analysis they did for them. And it's all about, it may not necessarily be about click-throughs, it's about face time and eye time. They don't have to click on it, but if they just see it. All they have to do sometimes is just see it in front of them. Even if it's for a second while they delete it, they still got something accomplished. They still planted a seed in your head. So a lot of times it's just about getting it in front of the user. So it sucks, but it's fact. It's fact. Oh, let's see. Where was I? Number 9. Hands-off internet phone calls. Just because the creaky old phone system was regulated to death doesn't mean voice over IP should suffer the same fate. What do you think about that?
Oh, come on. You know what I'm going to say to that.
Well, say it.
Hell, yes. Don't touch it.
Well, what about, okay, is there... All right, I'll play devil's advocate here. I don't know if I'm being devil's advocate or truth. Let's discuss this. What about the requirement of support for 911?
That I agree with. Especially because, obviously we're moving more and more toward IP telephony, every day. So eventually, and I know people are going to attempt to flog me for this, but I think eventually copper is, not obviously copper completely, but copper phone systems are going to be gone. That seems to be the direction we're moving in eventually. I'm not saying it's going to be next year. I'm not going to say it's in the next 10 years, but eventually. And so, obviously, if we completely get rid of these copper lines or copper phone systems and you have IP telephony, if they're not regulating at least 911, then who knows?
Right. So there might be some things that would be useful, but the majority of them overregulated. I agree completely.
I think the taxing is the biggest thing for me. If they're wanting to start charging for IP telephony stuff, these are companies' private networks.
Well, wait a minute. Be careful when you say taxing. Taxing, we're not going to get away from.
Right. Well,
fees.
Fees that the government's forcing upon the companies
right.
for regulation.
Right, which they are in turn passing on to us in the form of fees.
Right.
So they're getting taxed, but they're passing them on to us and disguising it under the word fee.
Right.
So, yes. Oh, number 10, free the handsets. What they mean by that is we should be able to buy any cell phone and match it with any service plan.
I definitely agree with that, considering I've been wanting a Sidekick for the last 6 months and can't get it till my Singular contract is up. So, yes.
Yep, I think that is a good thing. I don't know how realistic it is, but I don't see why not. I think the cell phone manufacturers should, instead of signing these contracts and exclusivity deals with people, I would open up the market for everybody. Let the best cell phone win. People are going to buy the phone that works the best, and they're not limited by what they can use with their particular provider of choice. And same thing with the plans. Number 11. Larry Flint... build a porn browser. Well, and that's kind of funny, but let me read the point that they put under it. It says, it should cover our tracks coming and going. So what they mean by this is actually a privacy thing. Covering your tracks so that people can't trace you, track you, and get into your business. Protect your privacy and let you surf porn in peace. It's not so much to ask.
Hey, if anybody wants to start a encrypted HTTP proxy service with me, hey, I'm all in.
Yeah, they make this as a joke for porn, but it is a privacy issue. I would love to have a browser that I can anonymously surf and not worry about people, following and tracking what I've been doing.
Oh, definitely. I'm paranoid because I have Comcast, and they're kind of known for a Big Brother type attitude at times.
Yep.
Not that I look at anything that's, but...
No, but it's the principle.
Right.
It's the principle. It really is. Number 12, make email addresses portable. And it's never going to happen.
No, I don't think that would catch on quite like the number portability thing has.
No.
But
it's not.
Kind of funny.
Yeah, logistically, it's not possible. It's not. Anything's possible, but logistically, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, the DNS information would be.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you would keep track of that.
Everybody
have a SMTP server that replied with "user has moved to this address,"
or some type of auto forwarding
right.
of everybody's mail. But you know how long that would be before it suddenly became there would be so much traffic. Oh my gosh! You know what? And no, it's just not logically feasible. Number 13. Don't let the Pentagon hog the airwaves. The DOD doesn't need that many civilian-free radio frequencies to do its job. I'm sure there are a lot of the hammers out there, the hammies that will say, free the airwaves. I think that goes without saying.
I think I'm going to agree with that.
I don't know.
Regulations what, I don't agree with, and yeah, that's one of them.
Exactly. Overregulation is the biggest problem in this country, but I won't go there. And frankly, though, I'm going to admit that I'm not educated enough in this to know specifically. I don't know how many they have, if they have an overabundance or a reasonable amount. I don't know. If they do, assuming that they do from this slant of this, you know, I'd say, then yeah, of course, free the airwaves, give them to the people. Jeez, owning the airwaves? I've never gotten that. Ugh. Anyway, 14. Oh, this is a no-brainer. Dump the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Oh, yeah, we'll leave it alone.
15. Stop the U.S. Patent Office before they patent the hyperlink. Uh-oh, too late.
Stop the U.S. Patent Office before they allow anything to be patented.
Yeah, and that's a redundant joke because right underneath it says, oops, too late. Those of listeners who may or may not know, someone claims to have invented and patented the hyperlink. They were issued a patent for something called a hyperlink, and that is a link to click on something as a shortcut to another site.
Well, the way things are going, next week I'm actually applying for a patent for the missionary position.
Yeah, I'm gonna patent the process of breathing in and out. Number 16, simplify web publishing. Why can't we post files from our desktop to a website in one drag-and-drop move?
I don't know about that. Every time we've seen this type of thing, front page extensions, et cetera, it's never been...
It's not that easy.
Pure, easy, I don't know.
It would be easier for a user, but it's just not that easy. You can't simplify something that's not that simple.
Right.
So, idealistically, sure, it'd be great, but no, not quite going to happen. There could be some very simplified web publishing tools to do that, but they wouldn't be as feature-filled, and you wouldn't be able to do everything you wanted to do with them.
Well, actually, I don't know if I agree with that. I think any of the major web development programs, if they just would take it from a security standpoint for once, rather than simplification, you know?
Well, you can't have one with... You have to work them both together, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, like... Using simple, like, Secure Shell's SFTP instead of FTP or some other publishing form, you know, that would make everything great to add that to your publish here button or whatever, but oh well, such is life.
Yep. 17, let 1,000 Wi-Fis bloom. What they mean by that is let the Wi-Fi spectrum begin. Let the canvas across the world of Wi-Fi networks happen. Constant coverage everywhere all the time. Beautiful idea. Realistically, not going to happen.
No.
Beautiful idea. At least in metropolitan major cities, I wish it could happen. It should happen. And I think it's possible, but not feasible. The cities themselves could use... Well, never mind. I'm not even going to say that. The cities themselves should redivert funds and try to make something like this happen. Number 18. This is an interesting one. I think I agree with, but... 18, build a .sex.sex red light district.
.xxx.
Yep, and that, I thought that was discussed before. Whatever happened, I guess it didn't make it?
Apparently, but I mean, I think the reason why they were discussing it is simplification of things like HTTP filters. You know, obviously, well, if it's a .sex or .whatever, don't let it through, but that'll never happen.
Right.
Well, and you know, somebody tries to regulate that too, saying that you know you'll be fined or whatever. But
right, well, you know, there are all these Surf Nanny and Surf Watch and all that kind of stuff that are trying to filter out sites like mine. Sometimes an old school freak.
Well, the problem is though with regulation on that scale, it's a worldwide issue, and so you're never going to have. I mean, even if the organizations that cover the World Wide Web. You know, they're never going to be able to necessarily force porn sites into a certain domain name.
Oh no! Well, it would be voluntary, and those ones that volunteered to go into the .sex would be filtered out from the nanny filters and stuff. And from a legal standpoint, I think a lot of them might actually do that voluntarily because of the legality issue.
And VeriSign would be right there.
Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. Number 19: make privacy a personal asset. A law that prevents firms from consolidating all customer information after a merger. I talked about this a few episodes back, too, about how companies buy each other up or buy each other's database and consider themselves, quote, partners or a business relationship that allows them to share your information with a partner company. So, making privacy a personal asset, absolutely. Absolutely. Don't share my information. Matter of fact, don't keep my information at all. When I go shopping, like for example, some of the stuff I've been purchasing lately has come from a site called eTronics.com, and I don't mind giving that URL out. Uh-oh. Did I drop Voodoo Hal? You there?
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
All right, well, I'm going to let that go. We're going to keep right on recording. I don't know if Hal's going to call me back, but I'm going to keep going. Privacy, a personal asset. I absolutely agree with that. Don't keep my information at all. The site eTronics.com, where I bought some stuff lately, they have an option on their checkout page where you can purchase information. You can purchase something without signing up for an account. You can either sign. Most places try to force you to sign up when you want to check out and order something. And with eTronics, they give you an option of just checking out without signing up. So, yes, you give them a name and address to them to ship to, your information, et cetera, for them billing. And they probably do keep it. But at least they don't put me on some list and constantly spam me and all that kind of stuff. It's a one-shot transaction for the most part. So I think that's a cool thing. And maybe Voodoo Hal was hanging up there, got disconnected. Maybe he knew it was the end of the show time. So that was my timer going off. That was number 19. I'm going to hit number 20 and stop with that, I guess. Number 20 is Rollout Gap for Geeks, G-A-A-P, which is Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. Now, anybody, business majors would already know that, but GAAP, the term G-A-A-P, is not a very common term. Generally Accepted Accounting Principles for Geeks. And their definition just says, or their little blurb says, just as with accounting, create an industry standard for networking security. Don't forget the penalties for companies that don't comply. Now, I think a lot of the listeners, we all know that companies are very lax on security. They do very poor on security. Holding them to an official rule gap is an accepted standard within the accounting community. It's not a government-regulated thing, so to speak. It's more of a voluntary regulation or an industry regulation. So having something like that for network security that anybody who wants to set up an ISP or anybody that wants to set up a website, etc., they have to meet these set standards, will make a very secure internet, or at least it will make steps, leaps, and bounds towards an internet. And let's see if this is Voodoo Hal calling back. Voodoo Hal Hotline.
Sorry about that. The phone just died.
No, that's okay. We went right on without you. And actually, you got perfect timing. What I did is I'll back up and redo the 20th one. It was Rollout Gap for Geeks. Now, I don't know if you're a business major, but GAAP, G-A-A-P, which is Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. And that's an industry standard in accounting, which, by the way, I hate. That it's an industry standard that all accountants have to standardize the way they do things and have to fit certain rules. What they're suggesting with this is that the same industry standard, they should create a similar industry standard for network security. Anybody that wants to set up a website or an ISP or something like that, they have to meet industry standards for security, minimum standards to operate. I think it's a good idea, well-founded. I don't know how effective it would be, but making ISPs update every X number of days and penalize them if they don't do that.
I definitely agree, but I think it's more idealistic than anything else.
Right, and a lot of these things are. But you know what? The more we talk about them and present them, hopefully they will come to fruition, maybe. Anyway, I'm going to stop with 20. I was hoping to get 25, but we'll stop with 20 and cover some more next week. Perfect timing. You call back to wrap up the show here. Let's see. I'm going to make a note here. We stopped at 20. And we'll touch the rest next. You know what? I also want to talk next week, if you can make it, if you're available next week, to talk about the GPL.
Sure.
Does that sound, would you be up for that?
Definitely.
Okay, I did a little mini review last week on that Sun Java desktop system, and you and I discussed it offline and the effects and the relationship with the GPL on that. So I think that can make an interesting topic, and we'll continue some of this list and all kinds of other things. Well, this was, I don't know. Is it just me, or did we just blow through a lot of good information on this show?
Definitely. I think we covered a lot of good stuff.
I think this is one of the best episodes, if not the best episode. We covered a lot of stuff. Shout-outs. You're just back in time. Why don't you got any shout-outs you want to give?
I missed this. I got Michael Jackson on the CCCPR.
Oh, you're not. No, you're not shouting out Michael Jackson.
No. I missed David Hasselhoff. There you go.
Oh, no.
No.
Wait a minute. The music or the acting?
Job to everybody on the forums. That's pretty much it.
And me, I've got a weird shout out for you. At my 2600 meeting, which of course takes place in a mall. 2600 meetings are in the food courts and malls, public area. There's an Everything's a Cookie Store, right? We're in the food court at the mall. Everything's a Cookie Store. Or I don't know what it is. I call it that. I don't know what it's called. It's Everything's a Cookie. How hard is it? It's an Everything's a Cookie Store. So there's a young lady that's there. I see her every month. I go over to her. She sits back behind there, obviously bored to tears. You know, a customer comes up occasionally. I've been there. I've done, you know, I know what it's like. So when I go over there, I'll just sit and chat with her and talk to her sometimes when I'm walking out, something like that. Just kind of flirt with her, be nice to her, just, you know, make her laugh, stuff like that. Kind of essay my way, social engineer my way into a couple free cookies. So my shout outs go to her. And people like her. People out there that are, you know, you gotta make money. You gotta get a car. You gotta get out into the world. You know, you gotta get computers. We take for granted sometimes that we have a couple systems in our house. And I know you have hooked people up with systems before that you had spares. And, you know, people in the forums, you know, they need cables. I offered, you know, if you need cables, I can hook that up for you and stuff like that. Giving back and sharing, because we've been there. At least I've been there, and I'm pretty sure you've been there.
Right.
You know, so giving back, being nice to people, helping out when you can, it goes a long, long, long way, not only in social engineering, but in life.
Well, I would like to say I want to resubmit my vote for the biggest pimp on the forums. Not going to stink.
Yeah, because I got some free cookies.
Exactly.
Yeah, right, man. Something that rhymes with cookie. No, I made it through the whole show without... without going there. Oh, man. All right. And I,
give shout out to her. I can give shout out to David Hasselhoff. So.
Yeah, there you go. And back again, distributed team. Everybody on the distributed team, top to bottom, shout outs to them. And I go out there and check it out almost every day, every couple days anyway, to see how we're doing. I think it's fun. I love watching it. It's coming along great. And, dude, we're right up there, man. We're right up there with some of the biggest groups out there. So that's it for me. You know how to get in touch with us, radio@benrev.com. If you got any kind of general feedback questions, you want us to talk about something, you want us to shut up about something, email us, let us know. And like you mentioned before, if you've got some suggestions or some time or something to offer for our Root Wars project, by all means, contact Voodoo Hal. You want to give them your emails again?
All right, at voodoohal@benrev.com or voodoohal@mojonetworks.net.
By all means, follow up with him on that. And we're going to close tonight. This is a song that I stumbled across. It's an RIAA phone call. It's a song. And I hope I'm crediting the person with this right. I found it, and it was listed under the name John Hargrave. So I'm going to close with that. This was a call to the RIAA, which broke into some music, broke into a song. So I'm going to close with that, and that's going to do it, episode 27, in the books. So, all the listeners, we will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Recording Industry Association of America. Hello? Hello?
Well, I recollect the days when music was free. You could tape from the radio, burn the CD. Now the RIAA wants to know about me. My address, my number, my ISP. Yo, bitches, ain't we still got privacy? Why the president be letting you spy on me? How many tricks are gonna be letting you try on me? Trying to be spying on my MP3s. But you protect your corporate privacy. Keep your phone number hidden from the... 101. Why the RIAA starting litigation? The cops should be looking for the real perpetration. The killers, the racists, the rapists. Instead of fucking with us for saving you a hard business. Raise your middle finger if you feel me, low. These fucking subpoenas are a fucking joke. Leave us alone and throw us a bone like I did with your mom that time at your home. There's no such thing as bad publicity, even if you're giving it away for free. So join us in the 21st century, where we find the new songs on MP3. Embrace the new technology, Grokster, Kazaa, and P2P. So call this number now and help them see. And if you call from work, your call is free. 775-0101, 775-0101, 202-775-0101. 202 is the area code, and we're dialing 775, and then we be smiling. 1-1-1, Kerry Sherman, well, isn't this fun? It's Thug.com. You know, they've never been fair to the band. Now the RIAA takes a stand. Can't believe we're getting preached to by the man. So what's the plan, Stan? I've got a short attention span. Well, they gotta change up the industry. Make it all available on MP3. Listen to people like you and me, and make us want to pay a monthly fee. This song is not my lyrical catastrophe. Go ahead and grab it, it's completely free. Ain't gotta pay a dime to listen to me. So share this song and fuck the industry. 775-0101, 775-0101, 202-775-0101.
Be sure to get the permission of your parents first.
775-0101, 775-0101, 202-775-0101, 775-0101, 775-0101, 775-0101,
we're 60 million strong.